happy Wednesday to you. Massive day in the world of sports. Let's get into it. Coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. You're always part of the show. 650-650 here on The People Show. Text into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Dunbar Lumber, three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. I'm Bic, Dom, Elon behind the glass, running the show. And again, you can chime in, 650-650. Huge day. Game 3, NBA Finals. Leo Messi making it official. He's an MLS player. At least he intends to. Still got to make it official, as the MLS put out their statement.
You can place the reservation.
There you go. There you go. So that's still on the way. But still, huge day in sports. We'll get into a bunch of stuff with the NBA Finals as well. Dave Dufour will join us in a couple of minutes here in about 10. From the Athletic NBA, I will set up Game 3. We'll talk about Game 3 later on in the show as well. I do want to start with just more fallout from yesterday's massive trade in the NHL. And I'll just pose it to you this way. Remove contracts. Remove what it costs to acquire. We'll talk about that in a moment. But just in general, who would you rather have? Provorov, who got traded yesterday, or Hronek, who got traded earlier? These are the two D-man trades here in recent memory where you're going to look at and say, hey, they're somewhat comparable, price points and all that sort of stuff. But just in general, the Canucks getting ahead of the defenseman trade market back in March, February. But who would you rather have? Provorov or Hronek? 650-650 if you want to chime in. And I've just been thinking about this a lot for the last 24 hours. And, you know, I kind of come to a spot where I think Hronek is maybe a player that's kind of on the rise, who potentially we haven't seen at his best yet. Not that I think we've seen Provorov at his best. His best season was age 21. But I think we've seen what a peak looks like for Provorov. Now, the last 3-4 years have not gone anywhere near as well for the new Columbus Blue Jackets D-man. Which is why it was a little shocking to say, hey, that staying power of what his asset value was yesterday. There was a little sticker shock in that, but nevertheless, he's had a sublime peak, which is why you remain in demand even at 26 years old to say, hey, we've seen what it can really look like. Can we push him to another level now that he's at his physical prime? And there's a gamble here made by the Columbus Blue Jackets because, in part, you've seen what a peak looks like. Filip Hronek, I think he's gotten to a stage where he's played his best season at age 25. It's the responsibility of the Vancouver Canucks to try to get more out of him. I think natural talent, Provorov's probably the better player. But who would I rather have? I think the answer might be Filip Hronek. There's the right-handed, left-handed component to this as well. But I'm okay trying to push someone to their summit rather than trying to reclaim what might have been. It has been a bad couple of years for Provorov. It has not gone well. Philly obviously hasn't been performing well, but are bad habits part of his game? There's a fantastic athletic profile there, and obviously, you know, as far as pedigree goes, 7th overall not that long ago. But as far as bets, which bet would you rather make? The one the Blue Jackets are making or the one the Vancouver Canucks previously made as well? 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Leaf hater Steve. I'd rather have Hronek. He's going to get better, and when he's healthy, can hopefully have a key piece that can run the second power play and be on the second power play unit. Now, you say get healthy. That's another huge component to this. I mentioned, hey, the right-handed, left-handed edge, certainly in favor of Hronek. There's nothing Provorov can do about that. he's a lefty. But he's also really healthy. He plays full seasons. He plays 78+. We're coming off of a couple of seasons for Hronek here, this past season, where, you know, it's fair to wonder. Didn't finish out the season, had to have that whole issue, but we'll see what he's like moving forward. It's not something I'm overly concerned about, but when we're nitpicking between the two guys that have been two of the biggest D-man trades here recently, you can throw Chikrin in there as well, but Provorov, to me, has been very, very sturdy, but I'd still rather have Filip Hronek as Vancouver Canucks acquired much, much earlier in the D-market. We'll see how that materializes the rest of the way, too. 650-650, get your thoughts in to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. And, yeah, you know, to leave Hater Steve's point, too, I do think Provorov is going to have opportunities to run units as well, second units. Rensky coming back, that's going to be a huge play for the Columbus Blue Jackets. But how do Juracek slide in? How does Betejchuk slide in if it happens sooner? We're talking to Aaron Portsline the other day on Monday's show. You can go catch that on the podcast, including all the other pods, Canucks Talk, Canucks Central, Halford & Brough, and the PDO cast. Will those players eat up minutes in other advantageous spots to put up points that maybe Provorov won't get those opportunities? Certainly, though, I think I'd just take the guy with the arrow pointing up rather than the player with the arrow pointing down right now. What can we get for Hronek right now? Could we get more than what we paid? I don't think so. Might be similar, but I don't think you would get more at this stage. Certainly, you know, cap space has opened up differently than it was when Hronek was acquired, but if you want to live in that world, I think it'd be fairly close to the value that you purchased at as well. We'll get into it in just a couple of minutes here with Dave Dufour from The Athletic in the NBA as we get set for Game 3 tonight. I'm trying to think here. Like, what is the next phase of Denver Nuggets basketball that puts them back into this series, or at least pushes them ahead in this series? It's 1-1 right now. But we're not really looking at a smooth transition into this series. It was a clunky game two by Denver. Yeah, they had that nice 20-minute run there, 25-minute run. But to me, in the important parts of that game, beginning and end, Miami was significantly better. Charged out to that big lead, charged back to wrap it up as well. We can talk about the officiating, obviously, late as well. But how they evolve into this series, it's what I want to get into with Dave. Because at the end of that game, we talked about it a bit earlier this week too, is Miami's depth just showed up. It's not even just that role players made big shots. It was the fact that you didn't really know where the ball was going to go next. Jimmy Butler did his thing, 9 assists. Didn't really have the point production you expect from a Butler, but anyone could be making those shots. It's tough to defend when the ball is the star of the offense. It's moving. Someone can make a shot. Kevin Love chimed in. Vincent chimes in. Kyle Lowry hits shots. Everyone was contributing. And at the end of games, it really looked like the Denver Nuggets got a bit tight. And they're in a spot, too. This is a bit newer. This is a bit newer for Denver than it is Miami. They do this. They make repeated runs to this level. Are they going to be calmer in the thick moments in Game 3? We'll touch on that with Dave Dufour in just a second. 650-650. A couple of more thoughts coming into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Sean from North Van texting in. Awesome show. Talking about the cost of defense. That is why I'm feeling 2 or 3 D-men will be drafted before the Canucks. Love to hear what you guys think. Honestly, I don't think you need to worry about a David Reinbacher. Is he going to be available at 11? We just know historically, D-men, at least two guys are going in the top two. That's just going to happen. I think there's a wish a Reinbacher might be there at 11. I think you can just start preparing for the fact that his name's going to get called earlier than the Vancouver Canucks pick at 11. There's such a demand on the position. I think a lot of teams are just looking at what's happened across the league right now, and deep blue lines are advancing deep in these playoffs, and I think you'll see a couple of guys rise before 11, where the Vancouver Canucks pick at the NHL draft. But we'll worry about that. Keep coming in with the thoughts into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Still 3 weeks to go before the NHL draft. NBA Finals Game 3 tonight. Let's talk about it with Dave Dufour, who joins us now to set it up. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How about you guys?
We are doing fantastic. Just getting hyped for this third game. And, you know, we've said it basically pretty much all throughout the playoffs. It's, hey, the Heat are again doing it again. And they're rising up to a challenge that people don't think that they can overcome. And it's almost become, since it's repetitive, the story is not even really about the Heat and how they do it. It's how does the other team respond? And three teams have fallen by the wayside. How do you think Denver responds now that home court advantage has been taken away?
Well, I think when you look at a team as good as Denver's been all year, you know, they're going to rely on their principles. They're going to go back to the things that work for them. I think, number one, that they've got to go look at themselves in the mirror, maybe look at each other in the eyes, and decide if they want to be a team that plays defense. Because the story of the first two games of this series has been a lack of defensive effort, a lack of physicality, a lack of, I hate to even say hustle, but a lack of hustle to a certain degree by the Denver Nuggets on defense. The story of the series so far is that the Miami Heat are shooting the lights out from three and that the Denver Nuggets have not been able to keep up. They had a poor shooting game in game one, were lucky to come away with a win, I mean, basically on talent. Game two, they lost because they just couldn't guard the three-point shooters of the Miami Heat enough to win the game. They should be up 2-0. They should feel like they should be up 2-0. They should be disappointed to be 1-1 in the series going to Miami. And so I think that if you're the Nuggets, you're just going to have to go and double down on actually committing to playing defense.
Okay, so we say this a lot too, and I think it's true. I'm agreeing with you that like the Denver Nuggets were not competing hard enough, right? But I do think they were competing. Is it relative to Miami, or is it just there's a certain standard that's not being met by some of these teams that have gone up against Miami?
Sorry, you broke up on me.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying, like, I think I do agree with you the fact that the Denver Nuggets, like, as Mike Malone was saying, they do need to put in a bit more effort. But we've seen this kind of consistently through three, four rounds now, teams going up against Miami. It's not necessarily that I believe that teams aren't trying hard enough. Is it just not trying hard enough in relation to Miami? Because they are extracting everything out of themselves, and yet there is a talent gap here between the teams that go up against the Heat and whoever they're facing.
That is exactly it, and you've nailed it. The entire playoffs has been about the Miami Heat playing at about an 11 on the effort scale, and their talent is maybe 7.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the playoffs, and now we're in the finals. Well, the Denver Nuggets are a 10 on the talent scale, and I would argue they played on about a 6 on the effort scale. And all playoff long, we've watched the Miami Heat out-effort, out-hustle, out-work, out-tough, out-physical every other team. And you would think by now, especially with a team as well coached and as good as the Denver Nuggets, that they would have been ready for that. But some things I think you're just not ready for. And Miami Heat being able to just do what they do, you know, asymmetric warfare is a term that comes to mind when I think about the Miami Heat, because they don't attack you straight up. They're not playing what you would consider a conventional style of basketball, especially defensively, where they're almost doing a matchup zone, a little bit of amoeba. I mean, you never know with them. And I think that has to keep you on your toes. And if you're the Denver Nuggets, the one variable that you can change, that we can identify, is effort. I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been bad through the first two games. Michael Porter Jr. has been pretty bad, especially game two. He was awful, I thought. Those two guys in particular have to pick it up. But everyone has to pick up their intensity, including Nikola Jokic, who's been probably the best player in this series so far. It's funny to say that, but he needs to even be more intense.
One thing that was kind of evident to me in game two is it felt like Miami understood the moment. Now, they've been here, right? They've been to a final, again, albeit in the bubble, but they've had these moments of repeated chances in the conference finals. And Denver, yeah, they had a nice run in the bubble, but again, it's the bubble. I just wondered, like, did they get a bit shook in the moment of that in game two?
Yeah, I'm not going to say that, because you got to give credit to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they played, they just continued to do what they've done for the entire playoffs, and that's keep the game close and hope that late they can turn it on and make something happen or force the other team into mistakes. So I wouldn't say that they looked shook, because in game one, no one would say that. We wouldn't say that about game one, so mm-hmm. I refuse to say it about game two. I just think the Miami Heat figured out a way to win that game. And now Denver's got to figure out a way to just be more forceful, be more impactful on every single possession. No more lazy stuff. You've got to break this mentality of allowing these guys to shoot. This is a good shooting basketball team. They've been proving it all playoffs long. They're one season removed from being the top three-point shooting team in the league. These guys did not forget how to shoot for a season. So you've got to just throw out the regular season beliefs. Throw out whatever your scouting report was saying. Play straight up, play hard, and just try to out-physical and out-effort the Miami Heat. If you can manage to do that, you've got the talent. You're going to win. The Nuggets should win this in five because it's about their effort.
Where does it start on the offensive side of the ball for Denver? Because you mentioned Jokic, but like he puts up 41-4, and yet at the same time, I feel like Spoelstra and the Miami Heat would be okay with Jokic putting up 45 combined points, so long as the rest of the offense isn't involved or the rest of the team isn't involved. I think they look at Forrest and say, great, that's a bunch of players standing around watching a guy play.
I mean, you know, absolutely. And, you know, obviously Spoelstra makes his comments about the untrained eye. But the truth is that is exactly where they would like to live. Make Jokic work and be a scorer, take away everything else, and the math just works out in your favor. This is where the Nuggets have got to play Nuggets basketball. You need more out of Jamal Murray. You need, obviously, way more out of Michael Porter Jr., but maybe you've got to figure out a way to get Aaron Gordon going again early, like you did in game one. Take advantage of the size advantage when you can get the mismatch. I mean, I understand that moving Kevin Love to the starting lineup and playing him 22 minutes in game one certainly changes the balance of the size battle. But they still play a bunch of small guards. And if you're Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., Nikola Jokic, Miami Heat only have two bigs to cover those guys. So you got to find a way to find the matchup, seek it out. And it's, you know, Jokic versus anyone is a matchup. And Miami has decided they're going to play him straight up. So now you've got to have other guys actually win their individual matchups. And until the Nuggets can pull that off, I mean, they could lose again.
I just wonder, too, on the defensive side of the ball for Denver, if because you're talking about all this effort, and it's true, but it does seem that there's no singular focus to how the Heat are going to do it, right? Like, Gabe Vincent could have a game. Martin could have a game. Kevin Love chimes in with three-pointers. And Jimmy Butler's, like, okay being a certain level of unselfishness. Hey, he got 9 assists the other day, 7 in game one. It just feels like what part are you supposed to key on to ramp up that effort?
I mean, the biggest thing would just be guarding shooters, because through two games, the Miami Heat have taken the overwhelming majority of their threes uncontested.
Mm-hmm.
Not just open, uncontested completely. These are more than 6 feet open is what the NBA defines wide open as, and these are just wide open three-pointers. So we shouldn't be surprised when they, you know, Max Strus can hit 4.25 when he's wide open. We should be more surprised when he does the 0-for-6 in the first quarter of a game. So I think the big thing Denver needs to tighten up on, but it's everyone that Miami has played so far. They've got to tighten up on helping off with shooters. I think they should just be playing those guys basically straight up. There's no one on Miami that individually should scare the Denver Nuggets enough as a scorer off the dribble that you need to send any help. Even Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
Even Jimmy Butler. He has not looked good. I think you just play those guys straight up, switch when you have to, and just dare them to hit tough shots instead of the wide open ones.
Hey, Dave, it's been fantastic. Before we let you go here, this is some breaking news. Chris Haynes just reporting and tweeting out, Phoenix Suns notified Chris Paul that he will be waived, making him a free agent. Yeah, So the market for Chris Paul, like even at an advanced age, I'm just curious, how deep do you think it will be, and how many more years does Chris Paul have to go get a championship?
I think that's a wrap for Chris Paul's championship chances. I mean, if you're getting waived by the Phoenix Suns,
mm-hmm.
I just don't know what your options are. You know, where does he fit? If he went to the Lakers, like, he'd have to go on such a discount.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're L.A., like, is this old guy who you basically have to start, a guy you want to attach to a team that's already kind of old? I don't know. This is a fascinating thing. I actually expected him to get traded this summer, not waived. So, yeah, that is breaking news. I just got a text message telling me I have to work. So
there we go. We'll let you go there. Dave, appreciate it, man.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks a lot. It's Dave Dufour. Breaking away with some breaking news there is Chris Paul waived by the Phoenix Suns. So he'll be a free agent going to this summer at age 38. Yeah, as the primary guy, like Chris Paul had his moment as the Sun to try to, no pun intended, had his moment to try to be the lead guy on a championship team. Doesn't happen. I do wonder if he can, as a bench player, get his ring.
The Lakers are just going to be a bunch of old guys, huh?
Have they ever done that before?
They have.
Have they ever, like, gotten, I don't know, maybe three or four superstars at age 35 plus and thought, this'll work. This'll work. Have they done that, I don't know, once or twice this millennium?
Feels like it. You know what would be
when
great?
When it was Malone and Payton, it was very much like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great. And look, they made the finals and it was awesome. The second time, when it was Nash and
Howard,
Dwight, it was like, don't you want to learn from history?
Yeah.
This might not work. And it blew up famously.
But we have to also remember, David Stern axed a trade.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
That would have sent CP to the Lakers. And how poetic would it be that it takes him being waived by the Suns to finally end up in a Lakers jersey?
I just – would that even be enjoyable to watch?
I mean, look what Melo did, right?
But Anthony Davis with Chris Paul and LeBron?
Yeah, it would be enjoyable. I'm sure it would be. They'd figure something out.
It'd be so slow.
It would be.
Like, even
– it'd be big fundamental basketball is what it would be.
But, like, LeBron is still fun to watch.
Yes.
For the
– in spurts.
I would say for the – probably the 30 to 35 games of, like, max effort LeBron,
yeah,
it's still awesome to watch.
The load management on that team.
Yeah, but I'm not even saying, like let's be real. He coasts some games even now.
Oh, absolutely.
He has to do it to prepare himself for the – Playoffs. But I'm not even sure, like, a 30, 35 max effort LeBron with Chris Paul at age 38 and Anthony Davis, who's an injury away from months out, is an enjoyable watch.
Let's also remember that there's rumblings that Kyrie is courting
LeBron
to
Dallas.
So.
Yeah.
It's all hearsay.
I low-key, like, want to believe it.
That he would go to Dallas?
Yeah.
Just for the, like, the villain storyline,
well,
or?
Just going even back to, like, the All-Star draft.
Yeah.
When LeBron picks Kyrie.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, picks Luka. Can all kind of line up.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff, like, the NBA in particular, like, the player tampering in the NBA, out of control.
Yeah.
Out of control.
What tampering?
Guys know 8 months in advance. A year in advance,
yeah,
where they're going to go.
It's not tampering if it's between the players.
Oh, 100%. That's why I'm always talking to Josh Taylor Wolf. I'm trying to tamper to get him on this show.
I'm sure.
What?
Our,
I didn't say that out loud.
I'm sure our Toronto colleagues will find a way to figure out how Chris Paul fits into the Toronto Raptors system.
No. Not the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, sorry, yes.
How will Chris Paul, who's never won a championship, help Austin Matthews and the Toronto Maple Leafs, who've also never won a championship?
Yeah.
That is his free agent tour. Has Chris Paul ever worn Toronto Maple Leafs pajamas?
Guys.
That's what we need to know.
If the Raptors sign Chris Paul, puts them over the top. They're right there. They're right there with the Celtics.
Well, do the Suns need a point guard now? Do the Raptors trade Fred? Fred to the Suns? A lot can happen. A lot can happen. All right, we got to go to break. On the other side, Leo Messi going to Miami, joining stars like Jimmy Butler and Matthew Tkachuk. Tkachuk and Messi, who's the biggest star? But we'll talk about Leo Messi going to the MLS on the other side, plus some more on the Heat Nuggets in Game 3, all leading up to Canucks Central coming up at the top of the hour here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans, Halford and Brough in the Morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the People Show. Second half coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Massive news for MLS. Leo Messi is coming to Inter Miami. MLS has its next big star. What are you guys laughing about behind the glass? Can you guys even share?
We thought you were going to say the Zion thing and... You're like, no, don't go there.
Why would I start the show or come back to the show with the Zion stuff?
So MLS.
MLS. you know what? I was going to make a joke, but I'm not even going to try. MLS lands Leo Messi. You know, we were talking the other day. Conte goes to the Saudi League. Benzema goes to the Saudi League. And would Messi... tap into a huge contract, reportedly at $1.6 billion to play in the Middle East. He ends up going to MLS. And the point, you know, we were discussing before the show the other day is with the money that's being handed out to some of these huge stars, would the MLS miss out and start saying, well, we got to adapt now here. We got to change. How are we going to draw star power to our league if 34-year-old players are going to look at it and say, there's a huge payday waiting for us to go play in the Saudi leagues?
Reported $1.3 billion to Messi.
1.3 or 1.6?
Double-checking, 1.6.
There we go.
Yeah.
Huge.
He said no thank you.
But is he saying no thank you to go play in the MLS, or is he saying...
Sorry, you mean...
No thank you to... I want to be part of Adidas's profits. Because that to me is like... It's not even so much about the money that you're saying no to. Like, I don't think he's chosen MLS over the money there. I think he's chosen... It just looks like a better deal to me. Like, 1.9 is a crazy... Or 1.6 is a crazy number.
Also, I've never been to Riyadh or Saudi Arabia, but I'm sure that the quality of life is a bit more... You know,
it is different than Miami, different. Sure. But I don't even think it's like, wow, he turned down this amount of money. I think the deal of getting into Adidas profits with his arrival is pretty massive.
Yeah, but I believe those are shares of just his kit sales, right?
He's going to sell a lot.
He's
no
one
doubt.
Of the largest athletes in the world.
Understand.
He's going to be doing all right.
Yeah.
And also getting to share of Apple's...
The streaming revenue yeah.
as well.
Which they must be thrilled.
From a business perspective, this is a pretty good deal for Leo Messi.
Yeah.
I don't think he's turning down a ridiculous amount of money.
Also, we shouldn't undersell the option to buy a stake in the club after that. Look what that did for Beckham.
And what's the valuation?
It's up
for Inter Miami right now.
It went from $600 million
to over $1 billion
to almost $1 billion.
Almost
not
but
over
like,
yet. But
once he starts playing,
yeah.
Once they start growing,
yeah.
What do we think it's going to be? And now he's got a share in that. So the actual salary, right? It might look a bit different, but from a business perspective, shares and all this and profits, I think Leo Messi probably took the better deal. And what's scary now is every aging soccer star
yeah.
are they going to look at this and say, well, you gave this to Messi, now I want something like this too?
Well, not everyone's Messi.
But now the precedent's been set, right? Now it's like you're willing to do this. So while it's exciting and everything right now, is this the last one? Because I legit thought, like, once
Karim
Benzema signed, once N'Golo Kante signed there with huge sums of money, and there you can offer a lot for players to go there. The MLS, to their credit, had to get creative. But how many times can you break precedent for this?
But is this breaking precedent? This screams David Beckham's deal. Very similar to what David Beckham
had. Okay, but then we're talking like 20 years removed, basically. Like, is this a once in every 20 years kind of thing?
Well, that speaks to the generational talent that is Beckham and then Messi.
Who's the bigger star?
Beckham.
Between Beckham and Messi, right? Because I'm just trying to think where I like
sports landscape. Messi out, but reaching out of the sports landscape, it's Beckham.
650, 654 to chime in. Who do you as the bigger star? We're not saying better player. That's obvious, and better athlete. That's obvious.
Yeah.
But as far as star power and gravitas, like the Beckham to LA Galaxy thing was mind blowing.
Yeah, it was huge.
And it touched so many different – like, I remember people that I didn't think were soccer fans asking me about it because of Beckham's celebrity, throw in Married to a Spice Girl, all that sort of stuff. And so as bigger star – I actually kind of was thinking about this before the show, and I looked it up. The Instagram followers, which is by no means the perfect metric of star power.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of more people following Leo Messi than David Beckham. Different age and different moment in time for celebrity. But like the celebrity of David Beckham at that moment was out of control.
Remember
like,
they had a TV show?
If David Beckham changed his hair, it was news.
Yeah.
650, 650, Roshan from Burnaby. Beckham, much bigger star in the real world. It's bend it like Beckham, not bend it like Messi.
That's true. I don't think there's been a Messi movie.
I'm sure there's been like docs and things like that.
Yeah, but not like
I don't know if there's been like a proper Messi play on words for Messi.
Yeah.
This one, Kevin Pormoody, Bix lost, Lampard, Villa, Drogba have all come over, and a few others have too.
Yes, but
look, that predates a lot of this, right? Like Ronaldo, Benzema. And now Conte all going for these massive sums of money. It's obvious, like, star-level players have come to the MLS. And I would even say, like, top five, top seven players at some point. Like, Drogba at one point was just, like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
But is that going to stop now?
Yeah. Why would it?
Because there's so much money in the Middle East there.
Yes, but we have to... You have to consider that not everybody wants to go live in Saudi Arabia.
It's a lot of money, though.
I know it's a lot of money. But you have to remember that these are athletes that already have generational wealth. And the reason they're coming over is to live the North American lifestyle.
This one, Mike, the solo agent. Messi deal logistically, Miami close to home for Argentina, then Saudi, and Messi loves his home country.
Lost in all this is that he actually wanted to go back to Barcelona, and they just didn't show enough interest, according to Messi.
Did they show enough interest relative to what they can actually pay?
Yeah.
Because Barcelona have pulled so many economic levers to just stay afloat these last handful of years.
Yeah.
They've sold a lot of the future of what that club is through sponsorship deals, TV deals, and all this sort of stuff. I just don't know if Barcelona could even afford Leo Messi. Like, we're talking about $1.6 billion versus what Barcelona might be able to afford.
Again, if you're Barcelona, though, you can just structure an MLS-type deal.
But I don't know. Like, are they financially capable of doing that? I'm not sure Barcelona is.
That's
like, I think they've tied themselves into like 20-year deals into some things just to get the money early and try to go win your championships now. And their assumed move here is at some point everything will start to loosen up for them because they'll win enough. But in this moment of time, like, I don't think Barcelona can trade out a Ford to even do this.
They're also spending $1 billion to renovate Camp Nou.
Mm-hmm.
Not to forget about
which will stand the test of time, whereas is another two seasons of Leo Messi going to be worth it in relation to that, right? Yeah, like I don't doubt for a second Leo Messi would prefer to go to Barcelona, but I don't think they could even sit at the table with the finances that were being talked about here in this deal. This one, 650-650. I think Beckham had the North American British appeal. Messi's appeal in Europe and South America far outweighs David Beckham. Well, in Europe, like, Beckham goes, plays in Italy, goes and plays in France, and goes and plays in Spain, and he went to all these places.
He also had massive appeal in Asia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always go on tour.
That market would be massive. Like Manchester United routinely would go to Korea and Japan and all these places. So I think as far as star power, I think it mattered more that Beckham came to the MLS back then than it does that Messi comes to the MLS now.
Of course it mattered more because Messi's not coming today if Beckham didn't come back then.
Yeah.
He paved the way.
I'm looking forward to the idea, though, that could Messi come to BC Place? Or...
Oh, you want to talk about this now?
Or even better, could Messi come to...
Willoughby Stadium. In Langley.
Against VFC.
So we talked about this.
That'd be so... It would have to be like Vancouver Football Club would have to...
Win the Canadian Championship.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is tonight at BC Place. And then they would have to play in the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
And be drawn against Inter Miami.
And be drawn against Inter Miami. Or play them in the final.
Messi and Langley.
It's not happening, right?
Wild.
It's not happening. We talked about this in the bullpen. It's not happening. They wouldn't send him.
No, but what if they were like down 4-0 after the first leg? They're like, we got to come back. we can't do this. Let's send Messi to Willoughby, come out with the W.
Just staying at the Howard Johnson down the street.
Someone texting in, should I check my hearing? Did you say 1.6 billion, like billion?
Yes.
Yes. That was the reporter offer.
5 years or 3 years?
That sounds like
3 years.
3 years, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
And Saudis are printing money.
And he was very comfortable saying, nah, you know, I'm good. I'll go to Miami. Where, again, he's going to have to compete in the spotlight with Matthew Tkachuk right now.
We just missed out on Phil Neville coaching Leo Messi, by the way.
Well, he can play with, what's the son's name?
Higuain?
No.
He's gone now.
No, there's a Neville playing for Miami.
Oh, yeah.
Harvey Neville, right?
Harvey Neville.
Is it Gary's son?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not coach, but you get to play with a Neville.
Yeah.
Really learn how to be that marauding fullback. Because Messi's going to have to adapt, right? He can't be that gallant, slick, false nine.
No, not in the MLS.
No. Just start learning that fullback lifestyle for Leo Messi. Massive, though. I'm intrigued, man. I'm intrigued. But is it a bigger moment than David Beckham? I don't know.
Just to go back
I don't think so, yeah.
What you were saying about playing at BC Place potentially, we also have to remember that the stadium has to put in grass ahead of 2026.
But I don't believe Inter Miami's even on the schedule for the rest of the season, correct?
No.
Yeah.
But he doesn't play until next year.
But it would be until next year.
And they have to come at some point.
You were at the Zlatan game, right?
I was.
Yeah.
As media.
What was the vibe?
It was like the biggest show in town was happening. And it was one of those things where you go to the game and you realize just how many soccer fans are in this city, and they're there to watch the spectacle of Zlatan, not even acknowledged, like, I'm here as a Whitecaps fan. No, they're there for Zlatan.
Right. 650-650, Benny from Murrayville. It's cool, but it won't actually help the MLS at all. See, the thing
is... Look at franchise values.
The thing is, it's... I think what Benny's saying is it won't attract attention as much, but the MLS's goal here has been growth more so than anything.
And financially, they've grown.
And from where we were 20 years ago to where you are now to where you might be in 15 years, you kind of need moments like this for growth. So, yes, it will help the MLS, Benny, maybe not in the manner in which you're talking about, because again, it's do MLS championships register to soccer fans here, where it's easier. You've heard me say this so many times. The world's a smaller place, and it's easier to be a fan of anything. That if you wanted to be a Milwaukee Bucks fan and you live in Prince George, you can do it now. League pass, all these things.
Look at Josh, Denver Nuggets fan.
Our own Josh Haley-Wolf, yeah. Denver Nuggets fan. I don't think I met a Denver Nuggets fan until I was like 31. But now, hey, you can watch Jamal Murray anywhere in the world at any time. And so the fact that you can tune in, if your soccer club, you're like, hey, I live and die by Wrexham. You can do that now. I live and die by Leicester City. I want to watch Manchester City every week. And when you get to watch the pinnacle of a sport, does MLS championships register with people? And I think that's what maybe Benny might be saying, is it won't actually help that commitment level to say like, oh, this is I'm constantly watching the pinnacle of the sport.
But you know how you get there.
Through moments like this. Yeah.
Not just moments like this, but when you have MLS teams on the world stage playing the Real Madrids of the world and the Bayerns of the world and actually beating them.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it'll get there.
I think he will play in Seattle or LA. If you're a big Messi fan, book your ticket now. 650-650 unsigned text into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Massive. Leo Messi going to Inter Miami. Announcing it earlier today. All right, let's wrap up the show here. More Heat Nuggets Game 3 thoughts. I gotta say, I'm super compelled by these NBA Finals right now. It's not David Goliath, but it's kind of like forming that way, because you got an MVP on one side and this scrappy ragtag group that they just compete, man. It's just... I know we're talking with this with Dave. It's just naturally fun to watch five guys just be maniacal on the floor. And that's what Miami do. Like, whoever's in the lineup, they're all just going after it. And it is entertaining to watch one side greatness. And we've seen it through rounds here. Like, Tatum, these are some fantastic players Miami's knocking it down. And they're just doing it with sheer tenacity. We mentioned this so much in this city. It's like we want to see players for the Vancouver Canucks just play with a certain ferociousness that does not materialize enough. Miami Heat are doing this. And however they've achieved this, and I know there's stories about Heat culture and Riley and Spo, but however they're doing it needs to be studied. Because it's clearly possible.
The Heat way.
You can do it with undrafted free agents. You can do it. Like, whatever they are doing is remarkable. And it needs to be studied. I wish I could tell you what we're all laughing at, but hey, you know what? We can do this. Should we pull back the curtain?
If you want to.
All right.
Sorry, I laughed into the
mic. I laughed. I think you laughed because I took a picture of it.
Yes.
So we have cameras set up, obviously, in our studios that link to other cameras as well.
Yeah, the stream.
Yeah. Dan Riccio and Satir Shah, coming up on Canuck Central.
Working remote.
Working remote today. And it just flashed up on my preview screen here, that live shot of Satir Shah.
And you had to take a pic.
I had to take a picture. It was too good. What was I even talking about? Oh, right.
Back to the Heat.
The Heat Nuggets. Even if you're just a novice fan, you tune in. I think it's enjoyable to just watch five guys get after it. And they make subs, all that. It's really like nine guys. But you're constantly watching the max of someone's effort. There's some enjoyment in that. Just from a casual, just tune in and say, hey, these guys are giving it everything. I'm kind of supporting these guys. And somehow, even though the Denver Nuggets are, for me, like a super likable team, are Miami kind of generating this likability finally at this stage?
Yes. I saw a fantastic meme, by the way, about this the other day, and it was NBA Finals, fundamental basketball versus the power of friendship. That's what it is.
The power of friendship?
Yes. Just like you said, nine guys mm-hmm. that are just all connected and
it
pulling
is fundamental
in the same
basketball,
direction.
Man. Like, that's why it's so enjoyable to watch. Like, since the Spurs, I don't think I've enjoyed watching a team like this. Obviously, like, the Warriors were great, but...
But it's different.
Like, that was just like, hey, we found a weakness.
Yeah.
And we found a gap that we're willing to exploit before anyone else. And we also have two of the best shooters of all time. And we're just going to exploit the hell out of this, try to catch up to us. And it revolutionized the game, and it's important. But as far as what I've enjoyed watching the most, that's the point I've been making here. It's like, there's no star in this team. Jimmy Butler is the one, highest salary, getting all this plaudits and all that sort of stuff. But he's willing to concede. To say, hey, tonight, Duncan Robinson, it's your night. Max Strus, it's your night. Bam, go do your thing. And it's someone showing up all the time. And in a series, especially in basketball, we can't really consider this in hockey, because you can't just have one guy dominate a series very infrequently, obviously. But very infrequently, right? Yeah. Like, if you were to break down an NBA series, you would say, okay, I need the coach to win one game, I need the star to win one game, and then collectively we win two more. That's how we do it. And that's why I would say, it's like, hey, they haven't had a Jimmy Butler game, because Jimmy Butler is going to win a game on his own. But right now, the Heat kind of go into this and say, we can swap in whoever's going to be hot that night. You have to figure out who it is, and we can change at a moment's notice, because eight guys are ready for the moment. They're mentally trained to say, hey, if it comes to me, I'm going to shoot. Denver, again, there was some reticence for them in game two. How they tried to get that out of their mentality is going to be interesting, because it felt like there was a lot of a ball watching.
That felt like a blip to me. And you have to give teams leeway to have an off game here and there.
But there's no leeway in the finals.
I understand.
Like, there's
that.
No leeway in the playoffs.
Well, there is in game two. Mm-hmm. After you've taken a one-game lead, right? Like, it's not a must-win in the true sense of the word. I also think that in the moment we need to recognize just how special Jokic and Jamal Murray are.
Mm-hmm.
I think often we watch these games and we're like, wow, it's so cool. We don't actually put it into context and into perspective in the moment of just, like, how incredible they're actually playing when you contrast it against other teams in other finals. Like, those two players together are one of the best duos in the history of the NBA.
It's a great pairing.
Fantastic.
And their styles mesh as well.
Yeah, and guys, people don't realize they've played together for 6 years already.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamal missed all of last season. So if there's any time for them to put it together, it's right now in both of their primes.
And I don't even think we've seen, like, if they lose the series, they'll be back.
Well, you think, but so much changes in the NBA.
Sure, but like I think Jokic's level is high enough, and Murray's back clearly, so I think they'll have another run. Because I don't think this is like the beginning or the end for them if they wind up losing the series.
No, but it definitely feels like the crescendo.
You think
this is a team that's been working to get to this point for so long? Like, Jokic in Denver has been working toward this for, what, 6 years?
So my thing is, I don't know if we've seen the best of Jamal Murray yet.
Sure.
That's my thing. Is if.
But this is peak Jokic.
Right, but if he slides 2%,
yeah,
can the gap be made up by Jamal Murray? Because I think there's a better version. Because, as Elon just said, it's like he's coming back from injury as well. This is the first time we've really seen him look like himself since the bubble. There's a chance that he can do this for another, take a step for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And if that happens, then they'll be back. But we got to run here. Game three tonight.
By the way, Ron Francis, tomorrow, 2:30 on this show. Tune in, GM of the Kraken.
Seattle Kraken GM here on the People Show tomorrow as we get ready for a couple of weeks away from the NHL draft. And I'll see if we get Ron Francis' reaction to yesterday's trade and what that'll mean for the market leading up into the offseason. All right, on the way, Satyar Shah, Dan Riccio, coming up here, home with Canucks Sportsnet 650.